torment and the pain. Can't ignore the fact that I'm the one to blame. Time flies by, I'm locked behind these walls. Sleepless nights spent on my own. Don't wanna let go.
Tek insan nedir ki? Sadece bir damla. Uçsuz bucaksız gökyüzünün boşluğuna savrulmuş bir yağmur damlacığı. Tek insan neye yarar? Azgınca uğulduyan fırtınalar altında. Dayanınca bağrına kanlı elleri yeryüzünün, tek insan ne yapabilir sinip gizlenmekten başka? Yaşayan en yüce güç, en aşılmaz barikat halkın örgütüdür. Tıpkı bir okyanus gibi kurumayan, örs gibi, çekiç gibi şekil veren demire, kabaran dalgalarla karşılayan, uğulduyan rüzgarı halkın örgütüdür. Gücü güce ulanır, yükselir, derinleşir, arınır, dayanıklanır. Denizde bir damla olunca insan. Al ve savur benim de yüreğimi. Ufkuna kat, ateşlendir, şekil ver bakışlarıma. Beni yalçın güzelliklerle kuşandır. Sarsılmaz yiğitliklerle donat. Sevgimi yenilmez, sevincimi ulaşılmaz kıl düşmana. Öfkemi bile gürleştir, bilgimi rüzgarınla aydınlat. Örgütüm, al beni, halkımla yeniden yarat.
stai lumea trecătoare, unul naște și altul moare. Lume, soro lume, cel ce naște te fuiește, cel ce moare putrezăște. Lume, soro lume. Hai, maestre!
We'll be right back. my God, this is a UFO. Hey, I can identify that. I can identify that. I can identify that. What kind of question are you asking? What kind of answer do you want?
Rising by Susan Cooper. A drama from BBC World Service. Episode 1, Midwinter Eve. Will pressed his face to the window pane. The snow lay thin and apologetic over the world. The straggling trees of the orchard were still dark, the white squares on the roofs of the garage, the old barn, the rabbit hutches, the chicken coops. Further back, he could see the flat fields of Dawson's farm, dimly white-striped. All the broad sky was grey, full of snow that refused to fall. No colour anywhere.
4 days to Christmas. I wish it would snow properly.
Will looked away. The gift he wanted most this Christmas was something nobody could give him. Snow. Beautiful, deep, blanketing snow. And it never came. At least this year there was the grey sprinkle. That was better than nothing.
Oh, I haven't fed the rabbits yet.
Hey, James! Want to come feed the rabbits with me?
Said his brother. They ran down the stairs and clumped out through the sprawling kitchen.
Rabbits!
Shouted their mother.
They need feeding! And the chickens, too. And they both need fresh hay. James and Will, could you get some from Dawson's farm?
I know, Mum. We're already going.
Will shouted, shutting the door behind them. Outdoors was suddenly very quiet. Opening the cage to feed the rabbits, Will paused, frowning. Normally, they would rush forward, twitch nose to eat, but today, they leapt back in alarm as he opened their hutches.
Hey, James, what's the matter with them? They seem terrified of me.
Dear Will, happy 11th birthday, and happy Christmas from Kingston, Jamaica. Here I am, sending you a single present for both, which I know I always promised never to do, but let me tell you why. I was in the oldest part of Kingston one day during Carnival. Anyway, I got mixed up in a procession when an old man, white hair, deep eyes, appeared out of nowhere, pulled me aside, and said,
"You are Stephen Stanton of Her Majesty's Navy. I have something for you. Not for you, but for your youngest brother, the seventh son. It will be a gift from you, his brother, and he will know what to do with it in due course, although you will not."
All I could say was, "But who are you, and how do you know me?" He looked at me again and said,
"I would know you anywhere. You are Will Stanton's brother. There is a look we old ones have, and our families have something of it too."
I don't know what he meant by old ones, but, well, here I am, sending it to you, what he gave me. I don't know whether you will understand, especially after you see what the present is, but perhaps you will. You've always been a bit different from everyone else. Love, Stephen.
When the dark comes rising, six shall turn it back.
Three from the circle, three from the track.
Wood, bronze, iron, water, fire, stone. Five will return, and one go alone.
Tugging the handcart, Will and his brother James made their way down the overgrown drive of their house and along the road to Dawson's farm to fetch the hay their mother had asked for. Will glanced up at the treetops and he saw the sky dark with wheeling birds.
Whoa! Listen to those rooks, James. Something's disturbed them.
Come on, Will, let's pick up the pace. It'll be getting dark soon.
But why are they making a fuss? They ought to be roosting by now.
Oh, come on, let's go.
But as Will's head turned, he jumped and clutched his brother's arm.
What's up?
There's someone over there in the shadows, looking at us. Or there was.
Just someone out for a walk. So what?
No, it was a weird-looking man, all hunched over. When he saw me looking, he ran off behind a tree. He scuttled. like a beetle.
It's just a tramp, Will.
But it feels like such a weird day. First my rabbits were all scared of me, then the rooks, and now this tramp is spying on us.
Pull yourself together. Come on, let's get that hay for Mum. I want my tea.
The handcart bumped through the frozen ruts into Dawson's yard.
Oh, smell that. The cowshed must have been mucked out today.
Ooh. Afternoon, John.
Hey. The cattleman, John Smith, was grooming the great shire horse Polly by the stables. He raised his hand in greeting, looking at the two boys with steady eyes. Nothing missed John.
Ah. Well, James?
Farmer Dawson came out of a barn.
Hay for your mother's rabbits and chickens, you want?
Yes, please, Mr. Dawson.
John, fetch the lads some hay.
Right, you are, Mr. Dawson.
The farmer glanced up at the sky. Two black rooks were slowly circling, and Will saw a strange look come over his lined brown face.
The rooks are making an awful din today.
And Will saw a tramp up by the wood.
What was he like?
Just a little old man. He dodged away.
So the walker is abroad. Ah, he would be.
Nasty weather for walking. Look at that.
Oh, yeah, more snow coming.
The clouds of the farmhouse roof were massing, growing ominously darker.
It's a horrible day. It's weird somehow.
There's John with the hay. Come on, Will.
You go, James. I want Will to pick up something for your mother from the house.
John!
But as James pushed the handcart off towards the barn, Farmer Dawson didn't move. He remained where he was and looked up again at the darkening sky.
The walker is abroad. This night will be bad, and tomorrow will be beyond imagining.
And then he looked down at Will, and Will looked back in growing alarm.
Tomorrow will be beyond imagining? What can he mean?
You have a birthday coming, Will.
Yes, tomorrow.
I have something for you.
The farmer glanced briefly round the yard and then withdrew one hand from his pocket and gave Will an ornament made of black iron, a flat circle quartered by two crossed lines.
What is it?
For the moment, just call it something to keep. Keep with you always, all the time. Now put it in your pocket now. That's it. And later on, out of sight of others, loop your belt through it and wear it like an extra buckle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dawson.
Farmer Dawson looked at Will in the same intent, unnerving way.
Keep it safe, Will. The less you happen to talk about it, the better. You'll need it after the snow comes.
Will felt the hair rise on the back of his neck.
Come on now. Mrs. Dawson has a jar of her mincemeat for your mother.
But Mrs. Dawson was not there. Instead, waiting in the doorway was Maggie Barnes, one of the farmhands. Round-faced, red-cheeked, she always reminded Will of an apple.
Here's your mincemeat, Mr. Dawson. Mrs. Dawson said you'd be wanting it for young Will here. She went down to the village to see the vicar for something.
Oh, thank you, Maggie. All yours, Will.
How's your big brother Max, then, Will?
Fine, thank you. Grown his hair long.
Long hair, get away with you.
And then Will noticed her gaze slip upwards past his head and out of the corner of his eye. He thought he saw a flicker of movement by the farmyard gate.
No, no one's there. Get a grip, Will.
Right, Will. Let's be taken back. Bye, Maggie.
Bye, James. Bye, Will.
But as the boys were leaving the yard, suddenly the farm dog Racer appeared out of nowhere. Furious.
Razor! James!
Oh, come on, boy. He won't hurt you. What's the matter? Let's go.
James, something's wrong. Razor, he's never been scared of me before. Something's awful.
Let's go.
The daylight was beginning to die. Dark birds thronged over the treetops, even more agitated than before. And there he was.
James!
The stranger in the lane, standing beside the churchyard.
I told you there was someone watching us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
A shambling, tattered figure, more like a bundle of old clothes than a man. He turned his shaggy head to look at the boys, and then, suddenly, rushing down out of the sky, two huge rooks swept at him. And then three more whirling black shapes after the first two, diving wildly at him, again and again.
What was that? Brooks, they don't do that sort of thing. They don't attack people. They just don't.
No.
Dazed, Will felt his cheek brush against something, and putting his hand to his shoulder, he found a long black feather there. And he suddenly became aware that someone was trying to tell him something.
Something I can't understand, like a kind of silent shout.
That was quite a thing, wasn't it? When the rooks came out from the sky. Oh, no. Well, what a thing. I suppose the tramp must have been trying to catch a rook and it got wild. Oh, well, on we go.
James is forgetting. He's forgetting it. The attack.
How are you feeling about your birthday? Do you want to know what I got you?
It's running out of his mind like water. As if something is wiping it from his memory. Something or someone doesn't want him to remember what has just happened.
Hello, everyone.
Come on, chop chop! That table is not going to lay itself. Oh, turn that radio off.
Why is it doing that?
I can't hear myself. Will
sat quietly at tea, his fingers closed round the iron circle in his pocket and held it tightly. This time the iron felt warm. He kept his mouth full to avoid having to talk. Not that his talk would be missed in the cheerful babble of the Stanton family, especially given he was its youngest member and the ninth of nine
now,
children.
What do we have for tea tomorrow, Will?
Oh, liver and bacon, please. Oh. Oh, shut up, the rest of you. It's Will's 11th birthday. He can choose.
Say, please, Will, tell us you don't really want to have liver and bacon.
Oh, shut up, James. Let him have what he wants. It is what he wants,
Will. Sorry, I'm late, Mum. Oh, I had to walk from the common. Wow, you should see it out there. Like a blizzard. What? Don't you all know it's snowing?
Oh, real snowball. Heavy.
Oh, I'll say here.
Look. Oh, wow. Look at it. It's covered.
Oh, shut the door.
Shut that door.
Later that evening, as Will climbed the stairs to his room at the top of the house, he could think of nothing except what he hoped he might see in the morning. Snow everywhere. He opened the bedroom curtain and pressed his nose against the cold window pane, gazing out into the dark.
Still snowing. Heavier, if anything.
As Will slipped into his bed, he reached over into his trouser pocket on the chair beside him and took out the strange iron ornament that Farmer Dawson had given him. He ran his fingers around the circle and along the inner cross that quartered it. It was freezing now.
Such an odd kind of iron. No shine, but no rust either. And so cold to touch.
Loop your belt through it, out of sight of others. After the snow comes, you'll need it. You'll need it. You'll need it.
And it was then, without warning, that the fear came. The first wave caught him as he scrambled out of bed. It halted him stock still in the middle of the room.
I can't move. The rooks.
And then the image of the attack was gone, and he was released.
Nothing's wrong. Everything will be all right. If only I can stop thinking and go to sleep. It'll be your birthday when you wake up. Oh, frightened of the dark. How pathetic. Look, there's the bookcase and the table. Everything's ordinary. Just go to sleep.
Will still tossed uneasily. The feeling was growing worse every minute, as if some huge weight was pushing at his mind, trying to take him over. And then into his mind came a dreadful darkness, a sense of looking into
a great black pit.
And the fear jumped at him again, like a great animal that had been waiting to spring.
I can't move again. I'm going mad!
Going mad!
It's mad!
Will! Will, you all right? You're huddled in a ball. What was that crash?
The skylight in the ceiling was hanging open, swaying. A black square of empty night in the roof. And on the carpet below the skylight, a heap of snow.
Well, I suppose the snow was too heavy for it. Did it wake you? Lord, what a horrible shock.
Yes, yes. It was a shock.
Well, I tell you what, Will, it's freezing up here. Why don't you go down to our room and sleep in my bed, hmm?
Okay.
All right, then.
Thanks.
Come on.
Will bundled up his discarded clothes, picked up the belt and its new iron ornament. He smiled at Paul, but still he felt...
I can't stay here. I just can't. I feel as though something is attacking me. I just don't know who or what.
Because he had noticed something that Paul had not. Buried in the heap of snow on the attic room floor, Will had seen the fresh black wing feather of a rook.
This night will be bad. And tomorrow will be beyond imagining. The dark. The dark is rising. Oh, the dark is rising. The dark is rising.
The Dark is Rising, a drama by Susan Cooper. Episode 1 of 12 was adapted for audio by Robert McFarlane and Simon McBurney. The Dark is Rising, a drama by Susan Cooper for BBC World Service. Episode 2, Midwinter Day.
When the dark comes rising, six shall turn it back.
When the dark comes rising, six shall turn it back.
Three from the circle.
Three from the circle. Three from the track. Wood, bronze, and iron. Water, fire, and stone. Five will return, and one go alone. The dark is rising.
I will tell you only this, Will Stanton.
The dark is rising.
You are bound to devote yourself to the long conflict between the light and the dark. You are one of the old ones, the first to have been born for 500 years.
Will Stanton was woken by music. Music of such deep enchantment that he woke smiling in pure happiness at the sound. In the moment of waking, it began to fade, and then, as he opened his eyes, it was gone. The room was still. There was no music, but Will knew it was no dream. Cold light glimmered round the edge of the curtains, but no one was stirring anywhere. He pulled on his rumpled clothes from the day before, crossed the landing to the central window, and looked down.
Snow! Oh, so much snow! Wow!
All the outbuildings surrounding the family house were mounded into glistening square towers of white. And beyond them was the familiar landscape of fields and hedges. There was Dawson's farm, buried to the horizon's brim.
Will Stanton.
Where's that coming from?
Welcome, Will.
Who are you?
He swung round. Nothing. But when Will turned back to the window, he saw that his own world had vanished. Everything had changed. The snow was there as it had been a moment before, but now there were no outbuildings, no roofs, no fields, no roads, no buildings of any sort, only trees.
Trees everywhere.
Will was looking out over a great white forest.
Where's everything gone?
A forest of massive trees, and the only break in the white world of branches was away to the south, the River Thames, like a single black ribbon in this vast snowy ocean of forest.
Robin! Hey, Robin! Wake up, Polisher! Robin? Robin? James! Wake up, James! You have to see this! James! Everyone! Wake up, everyone! Wake up!
Silence. No answer. The house and everyone in it lay in a sleep that would not be broken.
Oh, I need to get out of here. Got to get out. Oh, my jacket. Where is it? Oh, yeah, the sheepskin one. My boots. Okay. Oh, I need to get out of here. I've never seen so much snow.
As Will moved away from the house, he suddenly felt very much alone.
It's much too quiet. There are no birds. No birds singing.
He made himself go on wading through the snow without looking back, because he knew that if he did look back, he would find his house had vanished. Will just accepted everything that came into his mind without thought or question, as if he was moving through a dream. But at the same time, he knew.
I'm not dreaming. I'm wide awake.
Yes, he was wide awake in a midwinter day that had been waiting for him since the day he had been born, and for centuries before that. As he trudged through the snow, he could feel that something or someone was driving him on.
I've got to get to Huntercombe Lane. Wait, this is Huntercombe Lane. But where's the village gone? There are only three houses here, and they're made of stone.
At the sound of banging, Will's hand instinctively moved to the buckle on his belt that Farmer Dawson had given him the day before. Now, it was very cold. Great showers of sparks were spraying out from where a man, a smith, worked on an anvil outside one of the houses. A huge black horse, midnight in colour, stood by the smith. Will had never seen such a horse. No markings anywhere. The man raised his head and looked at him.
It's John Smith, from Dawson's farm. Morning, John.
Hey, Will. You're out early.
It's my birthday.
So it is. So it is. Happy birthday, young Will.
John Smith looked at Will, but there was a warning in his eyes. And a figure moved out of the shadows behind that horse. Will's breath came faster. A hollowness was in his throat. He didn't know why. The man was tall, wore a dark cloak, his hair was reddish, and as he patted the horse, he suddenly turned and stared at Will with bright blue eyes.
It's midwinter birthday, and you will be 11 years grown.
Yes, that's right.
The cloaked figure glided forward.
Oh, you're hungry, Will Stanton.
As he dropped his arms, the morning darkened and an extra layer of cloud swallowed the sun.
Break your birthday fast with me.
Mind yourself, young Will.
John Smith swung a horseshoe into a bucket of water and the rider moved back.
The day grows, Smith. How much longer?
Your iron will not be hurried.
Get on.
There. He's done now.
The red-haired man at once moved his black horse round, tightened the girth, and slid upwards into the saddle.
Come up, boy. I'll take you where you want to go.
The folds of his dark robes flowed over the flanks of the black horse.
Riding is the only way in snow as thick as this.
The rider looked like a statue carved out of night.
No, thank you. I'm out to find the walker.
So that's it. I must find the walker.
The rider twitched the horse's head, leaned down, and grabbed at Will's arm.
Now the rider is a brawl. You will come with me, Will Stanton.
No, he won't.
But with astonishing speed, John Smith leapt forward and dragged Will out of reach.
That was a foolish move, my friend Smith. We shall not forget.
Oh, thank you, John. I hope...
They can do me no harm. I am a blacksmith. I belong to the road. On the road through Hunter's Combe, their power can do no harm. Remember that. Don't leave the road.
John, all I know is I must find the walker. But I don't know why. Will you tell me?
Ah, no, young girl. That you must learn for yourself.
John Smith turned and looked down at him for the first time, and compassion crossed his weathered face.
And you'll learn much more, for this is only your first day.
My first day?
So follow your nose through the day, boy. Just follow your nose.
Suddenly, a white mare, without rider or harness, trotted into the clearing towards them. A reverse image of the rider's midnight black stallion, and she came to stand quietly beside Will.
Good mare, good mare. Come in good time. Look well, young Will. I've not seen a horse like this ever before, but this will not be the last time.
Oh, she's beautiful.
Mount.
Bitch.
I'm not joking. It's your privilege. Take hold of her mane where you can reach it. You will see.
So Will reached up into her mane and...
But how did I get up there?
When I have shot her, she will even carry you, if you ask.
John, no. I think I'm supposed to go alone. Thank you, John. Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Go well, young Will. Remember, Will, follow your nose. Stick to the path.
From the edge of the trees, Will glanced back. John Smith had one of the mare's hind feet clenched between his knees and was fitting a shoe to it.
That's not a normal horseshoe. It's a circle quartered by a cross.
Again, instinctively, Will put a hand inside his jacket and touched the iron sign threaded onto his belt. It was very cold now, and he was beginning to know what that meant.
After the snow comes, you'll need it.
Will trudged on, passing a narrow side lane, and then something made him glance down the track. And there, some way away in the doorway of a low square hut, stood the shambling old tramp of the day before.
The walker?
So the walker is abroad. Ah, he would be.
And it was at that moment that Will left the safety of Hunter Combe Lane.
So the walker is abroad?
Me. What's it to you?
I want you to tell me some things. I want to know why you were hanging around yesterday, watching, why the rooks came after you. I want to know what it means that you are the walker.
You can't be the one.
I can't be what?
You can't be. You ought to know all this, especially about those hellish birds. You're trying to trick a poor old man, eh? With the rider, aren't you? You're his boy, eh?
Of course not. I don't know what you mean.
You might be the one. You might. If you're carrying the first sign that the old one gave you. Have you got it there, then? Show the old walker the sign.
As Will pushed the sheepskin aside to show the quartered circle looped to his belt, his hand brushed against the smooth iron, and now it was burning, biting with icy cold.
It's
unwise to leave the wrong Will standing.
Will turned, and the rider and the black horse edged forward. He shrank back against the side of the hut, staring into the blue star eyes of the man in the cloak.
I must show the sign.
So, you have one of them ready. Well, one will not help you, young Will. Not alone. Not yet.
The rider hunched his shoulders strangely, his horse tossed its head. And then the two of them began to grow, dark and vast against the snow, the stallion rearing triumphantly, lashing the air so that Will was forced back against the wall. Horse and rider towered over him like a dark cloud, blotting out both snow and sun. But then the rearing shape suddenly fell away to one side, swept away by a blazing golden light, brilliant with fierce patterns of white-hot circles, suns, stars.
The white mare from the smithy.
Will reached up, grabbed frantically at the white horse's waving mane, and again found himself jerked upwards onto the broad back, bent low over the mare's neck, clutching for his life.
Ride. Ride for Hunt Coombe Lane.
And the great horse leapt for the track through the trees, passing the shapeless black cloud that hung motionless in the clearing of the smoke, galloping, the world flashing by in a pale blur, wind wrenching Will's collar. But then huge grey thunderheads blocked out that sun, and behind, swooping towards them, a shape darker than even the clouds was suddenly above them.
One patch of blue left in the sky. There. Closing. Leap for it.
Over his shoulder, Will saw the rider, towering, immense, his eyes two dreadful points of blue-white fire.
Now!
The white horse leapt desperately at the closing gap.
Yes!
And they were through, free, safe.
Blue sky. Sun.
And now Will and the horse were galloping above the curving slopes of the Chiltern Hills, capped with great trees, beech, oak and ash. And on one hill, as Will looked down, he saw a vast mark cut through turf into the chalk beneath the soil. It would have been hard to make it out if it had not been familiar, but he now knew it well.
A circle quartered by a cross.
And then suddenly, Will's hands were jerked away from their tight clutch on the thick mane. And he was falling. And yet, he knew no shock of a fall, only that he was lying face down on cold snow.
Where am I? Where's the white horse?
Come through to us, Will. We have been waiting for you.
As he stood before Will on the snow-clad hill, standing alone and tall on the slope, leading to nowhere, were two great carved wooden doors.
The dark is rising. Oh, the dark is rising.
The dark is right, Cooper, for code 3, the sign seeker.
Come through to us, Will. We have been waiting for you.
In the snowy landscape on the windswept hillside, Will stood staring up at the carved panels of the two great closed doors towering before him. By instinct, Will placed his palms flat against the wood, and the doors swung open beneath his hands.
Whoa!
The world Will Stanton had inhabited since he was born seemed to whirl and break and come down again in a pattern that was not the same as before. He peered ahead into the darkness, and all at once sparks leapt and fire flared.
Wow.
Lighting up an enormous fireplace in the far wall, and he realized he stood in a great hall.
What is this place?
And on either side of this enormous fireplace, Two figures were waiting for him. An old lady leaning on a stick.
Welcome, Will.
And a tall man.
Come in, Will Stanton.
Will looked at the man and saw deep-set eyes, an arched nose, fierce as a hawk's beak, and a sweep of wiry white hair.
Come in.
And learn.
As he approached the fireplace, he saw the old lady was small, fragile as a bird, and Will had an impression of immense age.
Who are you?
The lady. She's very old. In her time, she's had many, many names. But it's best for now if you go on thinking of me as the lady.
Yes, ma'am.
Expect nothing and fear nothing. Here or anywhere. There's your first lesson. My name is Merriman Lyon, and I greet you, Will Stanton.
The tall man bent, lit a long taper at the fire, came forward, and began to put the taper to a ring of candles there.
We have been waiting for you for a long time.
Although he did not know why, Will felt compelled to stare at the fierce, secret lines of that face.
You look like someone I know. Do I know you?
In a sense. So you and I are similar, Will. Now look at me. Here's your first exercise. We have before us Will Stanton. Tell us what's been happening to him the last day or two.
Well, yesterday, the animals were all scared of me.
Yes.
And the rooks were mad. Farmer Dawson gave me a sign of iron.
Something to keep.
The circle with the cross.
Keep with you always.
Then the walker came after me. And then the rider tried to get me. They want the sign. I don't even know what time I'm in or who they are. Except for the rider and the walker. I don't know you either. I only know you are against them. Against the dark.
Yes.
You and Mr. Dawson and John Wayland Smith and
Go on, Will.
Wayland. That's an odd name. What made me say that?
Minds hold more than they know. Particularly yours.
The rider. When the rider saw the sign, he said...
You have one of them already.
He didn't know why I had it, but he came after me, chasing me. Why?
It isn't the sign they want most of all. It's you.
Why?
I will tell you this, Will Stanton. That you are one of the old ones. The first to have been born for 500 years and the last.
Merriman stood there, tall as a tree, in the shadowed room, and Will could not take his eyes from him.
Your birth, Will, completed a circle that has been growing for 4,000 years in every oldest part of this land. The circle of the old ones.
Will felt a tightening of his skin and a chill ran through his body.
The powers of the dark are reaching out now, steadily and stealthily, all over this world.
A shadowy awareness of evil was now pricking at his fingertips and the top of his spine.
And your task is to make the circle indestructible, Will. You must find and guard the six great signs of the light, made over the centuries by the old ones. And only when the circle is complete will they be joined in power.
For you are the sign seeker, Will Stanton. The first sign hangs on your belt already, but to find the rest will not be easy. You were born with a gift and a purpose. And you are here now, Will, to begin to understand what that purpose is. But first you must be taught about the gift.
I don't understand. I don't have any gift. Really, I haven't.
Listen now. The gift is a power that I will show you. It is the power of the old ones.